You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, captivating cats craving for cranial crumbs. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 83, and I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your surly circle of surrogates surfing and surveying for certain cerebral surprises.
Ooh.
Nice. I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Surrogates are meerkats.
Oh, okay.
FYI.
Oh.
Not surrogate.
Surrogates.
Surrogate. Right. And we're going to start the show off with our regular correction installment.
Actually.
Yes, we have an actually. Tom and Nathaniel wrote in, I talked about the mimic octopus a couple episodes ago. I totally didn't know this. Do you guys know this? What is the plural form of octopus?
I think it's octopuses.
I agree.
And but I think I feel like I've heard this before.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's not, people say octopi, but it's not really octopi because it doesn't come from, I don't know, something like that.
What is it?
So since octopus, the word is from Greek rather than Latin, octopi doesn't make sense because that's a Latin thing, not a Greek thing. Mm. So the correct form is octopodes.
Oh. No.
Yeah.
Octopodes?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Octopodes.
Huh.
But nice. Some grammarians and some professors and experts of the English language may argue that that's kind of old school.
Okay.
So can be also octopuses.
Okay.
So,
okay. I mean, and let's be honest, like if you were in a conversation and you just dropped in octopodes casually,
yeah.
People would be like, what did you say?
There would be eyes rolled.
Yeah.
All
it would not
around.
Be in the conversation anymore.
We're doing this now? All right. I think we're done talking.
Well, now you know, octopodes and octopuses are
okay.
Acceptable.
But octopi,
no.
Off the table.
Unless you're putting it in a pie.
Right, unless it's a pie made of octopodes.
Yeah.
Octopode,
pie that has octopi? Eight tendrils. Oh, that's a weird pie.
Oh,
listeners,
eight pies are octopi?
If you would like to make an octopi, please send us pictures.
Wow.
Twitter.com/gooddobbrain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. I am picking a random trivia pursuit card from the box. Here we go. Blue Wedge for geography. Where in the solar system can you find the Sea of Cleverness, the Marsh of Decay, and the Lake of Fear? Chris.
I believe this is on Earth's moon.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, you kind of psyched me up.
Well, I just want to be clear. It's Earth's moon.
Our moon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Correct.
As in not moons of other planets that may or may not be in the solar system.
That's true. You know what? That's a good clarification.
So it's a big M moon, right?
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
The moon.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, yeah.
So big M moon is our moon.
I think so.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's commonly accepted.
Okay.
Pink wedge for pop culture. What language is Brad Pitt's character allegedly speaking in the movie Snatch? Dana.
Is it, like, Irish or Gaelic?
No. I don't get this answer.
Are they looking for Cockney rhyming slang? Or
is the answer English?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
It is English.
So. Okay, I think it's just a trick question.
With the little line here. The character's impenetrable accent is a running joke in the film.
Because
he's supposed to be a gypsy.
He's speaking English, but nobody can understand him because it's so accented.
That was a weird trivia question.
Weird trivia question. Yeah. Somebody thought they were being clever.
Yeah. Okay. Yellow Wedge. What footwear did hecklers brandish to mock 2004 presidential candidate John Kerry?
Flip-flops.
Yes. Purple Wedge, what 1996 fictional diary included a running tally of the heroine's cigarette, alcohol, and calorie consumption?
Oh.
Dana.
Bridget Jones's diary.
Yes.
Bridget Jones.
All right. Green Wedge for science. How do I pronounce this? A commondor,
yes,
is what kind of animal?
Yeah.
Commondor. Colin.
It is a dog.
Yes.
And this is a good trivia. They're the shaggy, like mop-like dogs on the cover of like Odelay. You know,
from
the Beck
album.
Yeah. That's a commondor.
Wow.
That's right.
Commondor.
We had this.
Yeah, we've had this at trivia,
before.
I think we have had it at trivia.
It's like a picture of it. I'd be like, it looks like
a mop dog.
K-O-M-O-N-D-O-R. Condor.
Huh.
Condor.
Yeah, and it's a real dog, and I think I'm sure I learned that from pub quiz somewhere.
It looks like an old English sheepdog with dreads. All right, Orange Wedge, last question. What fiery baseball manager got so mad during a 1990 game that he uprooted first base, threw it onto the outfield, and then picked it up and threw it again?
I think that was Lou Piniella.
Correct. I don't know who that is, but
he was a fiery baseball manager and a fiery player in his day as well.
Oh, okay. Good job, brains.
Well, yeah, not bad.
Cool.
In previous episodes, we've explored things underground, and so today we're going to feature things that are in the air. So this week, we're talking about things that are up in the air.
You gon' touch the sky, you gon' touch the sky, baby girl, testify. Come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day you die, you gon' touch the sky. We back at home, baby. Sky high.
Okay, so let's get the obvious one out of the way, and I'll talk about airplanes.
Yeah.
I think I did a quiz about airplanes on a not so long ago previous
episode.
In our all quiz bonanza. Mm-hmm. Yes, we talked about airplanes. So here's
Are you going to do the same quiz? Here's even more.
We're doing same quiz again, and I've got it written down twice. We're going to do it twice. So have you ever been on an airplane and been really close to the wing and looked out the window and seen on the back of the wing they have those little mini wings?
Flaps, the flappy things.
Yeah. That's not really what I'm talking about, but it's a good intuit. They're called ailerons. Mm. That is what ailerons are.
Ailerons.
Aileron. A-I-L-E-R-O-N-S. That is French for little wing.
Okay.
It's the little wing on the wing. They give you more control over turning. You can use the ailerons. If you tilt one up and tilt one down, the plane will bank. Not that I suggest that you do this.
One could.
You are not pilot. One might. So there was a lot of debate back in the day over who had actually invented the aileron, because there were a lot of various people claiming that they had invented it. One of the men who had claimed at one point to have invented the aileron was an early aviation pioneer from the United States of America, and his name was Dr. William Whitney Christmas. Dr. Christmas did actually build one of the first airplanes that actually had ailerons on it. As opposed to patenting the idea, he actually built an airplane with ailerons, and it was one of, if not the, first to have this. However, that is probably the only good thing we can say about anything that Dr. Christmas did in the field of aviation or any of his airplanes. Dr. Christmas is actually well known, if for anything, for building one of the worst airplanes ever. Dr. Christmas says that the first airplane he ever built was called the Redbird 1. Then he says that it was completed and that he flew it on March 8th, 1908. Mm-hmm. Now, that date is significant because we know for a recorded historical fact, that 4 days later, March 12, 1908, Glenn Curtis, who was one of the early pilots, he actually made the first pre-announced successful flight of a heavier-than-air machine. So this was the first time anybody had ever said, because the Wright brothers, they just happened to get their plane off the ground.
Right.
You know? This was the first,
afterward.
I am going to fly a plane. Come watch me. And he was the first person to ever do it.
Pre-announced.
A couple of little trivia pieces here. A little bit of a segue. The plane was called the June Bug. And Glenn Curtis was the first guy to ever get issued a pilot's license in the United States.
Okay. Mm.
Orville Wright got license number 5.
That must have killed him.
They did the first batch alphabetically.
Oh.
So anyway,
I made this, you guys.
So Dr. Christmas says that he built the Redbird 1, that he got it to take off, that he landed it, and then he flew it again and again and again for the next couple of days until such time as he smashed it into a tree. And then, he says, to preserve his secrets, he burned the airplane, and that's why nobody could find it, because he burned the whole thing.
All right.
Now, there is photographic evidence of other planes that this guy built, the Redbird 2 and 3, and they were apparently displayed at early aeronautics, fairs, but there's really no record that these weird-looking things ever actually got up into the air and landed
safely. Do they not look like normal airplanes?
They do not, no. They look kind of weird. So he tried to capitalize on World War I, which was just getting rolling, by selling bombers to the United States military, but the military did not bite. And so finally, in 1918, he was able to convince investors to come in with him and give him money to build this plane idea that he had, and he was actually able to convince the army to loan him an engine for the plane. Mm. So he had the money, he had people building it for him, and he called it the Christmas Bullet. The Christmas Bullet is thought of as being the worst airplane ever. So
it's the worst airplane name.
Yeah. It was off to a bad start.
It's pretty bad. Yeah. So let's talk about biplanes. You know how biplanes, you have the two sets of wings, and then in between them, they have a whole system of wires and struts
and stuff.
And it's all for just stability, for wing stability and strength and all that. Dr. Christmas did not think so. Dr. Christmas felt that the best way to build an airplane was to have the wings flap like a bird's. He just popped the wings on there, and he didn't want them to stabilize. He wanted them to be able to go up and down like a bird's because, you know, birds can fly. So clearly, wings should flap. It's
copy nature.
So he actually was trying to sell this, this small plane idea to the army with the idea that we would be able to use the Christmas Bullet, the United States military, to conduct a daring solo mission to kidnap Kaiser Wilhelm himself, thus, you know, bringing about an end to World War I. And he hired all these people to build it at the early aeronautics companies who were just like, you are crazy, this won't work. This will not work. I'm not taking credit for this. But he found people to pay to build this thing.
And give him credit, like, go big, you know?
Absolutely. He totally believed in himself, and he believed in this design. What happened with the first test flight of the Christmas Bullet is that the plane took off, the wings ripped off of the fuselage, and the whole thing crashed, and the pilot died.
Oh.
This was the only test pilot they could find who was willing to go up in this thing.
Oh.
What Dr. Christmas did was, apparently, took out an ad in magazines and newspapers saying that his plane had completed a totally successful test flight, had flown super fast, and was awesome.
He burned the test pilot to cover his secrets.
Rebuilt the plane.
It's a little dark.
That's really dark.
So he rebuilds the plane, sends the rebuilt Christmas Bullet up, and this is 1919, sends it up on another test flight, piloted by a pilot, this time with the very fitting last name of Jolly. Flying the Christmas Bullet. Did he have a holly jolly Christmas? He did not, because the wings ripped off and the plane crashed and he died. And this turns out to be pretty much the end of Dr. Christmas's career. Storied career in the field of aeronautics. He was thought of as being a tremendous salesman and able to convince people to do things, but not so much a designer.
He convinced pilots to pilot the plane.
Yep.
Unfortunately, that person was also the last. Yeah.
No, the first guy wasn't the last.
That's true.
The second guy went up in there. He got two suckers. And what modifications have you made to the design? Nothing? All right.
This totally has something to do with in the air, but I'll get there. Trust me. I'll get there. I'm going to frame it in a weird way. So a couple of episodes ago, we had a hot episode, things that are hot. And Colin, you talked about capsaicin and the heat of peppers. And we talked about ways to soothe pepper burns. But we never talked about why are peppers hot. Do you guys know why are peppers hot and spicy?
I think I assumed it was like a defense mechanism, like to keep certain animals from eating them.
So let's talk about plants in general. There's a sizable population of plants that want to be eaten, right? Mm-hmm. They want parts of them eaten because it helps them spread their seeds. So like fruits, right? Fruits are, that's essentially the reason why fruits exist. So animals can eat the fruit and help spread the seeds for either through poop or through, you know, rubbing it off or whatnot.
What's our time to poop in this episode? it's pretty fast. Yeah.
Pretty fast. And some plants do not want to get eaten. And, you know, think about the cactus, right? Some plants grow in hard to reach places. They have thorns or they smell bad or they taste bad or are poisonous. So now at the intersection between these two camps is the pepper, which is kind of perplexing. The fruit of the pepper looks really pretty, looks really appealing, smells pretty good. But on the other hand, the fruit itself is super unpleasant and spicy and hot. And why is this? Colin, you're totally right. And I'm citing two sources here. One is a paper I found called Taxon-Specific Differences in Responsiveness to Capsaicin and Several Analogs Correlates Between Chemical Structure and Behavioral Aversiveness. And also another science writer, Anthony Watts. The plant is so smart. So capsaicin... The pepper burning sensation we feel is tied to the fact that we have nerve receptors, right, in our face nerve, and we're sensitive to it. All mammals have capsaicin receptors, but birds do not. Mm. So birds can eat a buttload of peppers and not feel a thing. So when researchers analyze poop from mammals and birds after eating peppers, the pepper seeds that pass through mammalian digestive tract becomes infertile, or they're chewed up, or they're destroyed. Mm. But the seeds from the bird duty, completely fine and fertile.
Okay.
And so the plant was like, well, I do want to get eaten and have my seeds spread.
but only by these guys.
But only by birds.
Got it. Yeah, I think I had read about the birds, but I never really understood, well, like, why? What's to what end? Yeah.
Yep, and it's because their digestive system doesn't ruin the seeds. So that's the current line of thinking, and research suggests that pepper plants yield hot peppers is the plant's way to select its eaters.
Well, they also have the advantage of, you know, you can do some airmail delivery of the...
spread it farther.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Spread it farther. It's related to birds, which fly.
That's my angle. Sorry. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Airmail delivery.
So, I mean, next time you see bird poop on your car or on the ground...
Taste it. Because
it might be spicy.
Delicious habaneros. Yeah. just try putting some on your sushi.
Yeah.
I was gonna say appreciate the wondrous nature of bird poop.
Okay, I have a quiz for you guys.
All right,
it's kind of a grab bag of things that are in the sky.
We gotta get our buzzers ready.
Get your buzzers ready. First question: what type of cloud produces rain?
Oh man,
Chris!
It's a cumulonimbus.
That is one type. Nimbus.
Okay.
Yeah. When it comes to clouds, are cumulus clouds low etage, middle etage, or high etage?
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, do we get to know what an etage
is? Etage. Stage.
Yes, it's French for stage. Right. Yeah.
Oh.
It's like, is it low?
I believe they're high.
No.
I was gonna say they're low.
They are low. Yeah. They're the closest
to the ground. They're the ones that are... Because fog is really close to being cumulonimbus clouds, right?
Yes.
It's just like clouds are sitting on
us. It's true.
Yes.
It's cloud on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ground cloud.
Yeah. I never thought about that. Is really fog like cloud?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ground cloud.
It is ground cloud. That's amazing.
This nickname for the reduced gravity flight is based on its effects on the passengers. Karen.
Is it zero G? No. Huh?
It is the vomit comet.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. What?
That's what they put you on, you know, when they do an airplane and they'll go up and down to like really fast to simulate reduced gravity.
Like, so they'll use it to film zero G scenes in movies sometimes.
Yeah.
So they're doing parabolic maneuvers where they go up at a sharp 45 degree angle and then they roll it at the top.
Yep.
And that's when you're zero G's. That's when you can fly, and then they go back down. And so you're feeling extra gravity on the way up and on the way down, but in the middle you're flying.
It makes me queasy just thinking about it.
They do it, so you get it for around 20 seconds, 10 mm-hmm. to 17 seconds, something like that. That's how long you're flying, and then they go back down and they do it 20 times, 20 to 40 times, depending on what you're up to.
Well, they give you techniques to not vomit. No, it's about where to look and
It's mostly anxiety induced. Just the doing that, and then probably smelling other people's whatever. That's my assumption. It's like
reaction.
I could probably manage my anxiety, but if I saw it like fly or saw people or, like smelled it, it probably would trigger me.
Especially at zero gravity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sorry. All right. So here's a question for you guys: how high does the vomit comet go to create the parabolic maneuver? Is it 24,000, 34,000, or 44,000 feet?
I know a normal jet is at 30-something. I'm going to guess 44. I'm going to guess the highest one.
I'm going to guess the lowest one, 24,000.
I'll guess mid.
Nice.
It is the middle one.
Oh! It's always the middle one.
The bottom of the parabola is 24, and then it goes to 34, and then back to 24. Like, that's how it works. What 2009 movie was released in Russia as "I Wish I Could Rise to the Sky"?
Up.
No.
Oh, no.
Was it Up in the Air?
Yes.
Oh.
So in Up in the Air, George Clooney's character gets special privileges for flying 10 million miles with which airline?
Oh.
I didn't watch the movie.
It's one of the major U.S.
Chris.
Delta?
No. Colin?
United?
No.
American Airlines.
Yes.
There we go.
Who paid up to get
this? Yeah, exactly. I was like, who's going to pay a lot of money?
You know, and that doesn't actually exist. They don't have a program for 10 million miles.
Oh.
They should, but
really?
They don't.
Yeah.
They do have a program for 1 million miles,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But 10 million, woof. All right. Which 1964 Disney movie included parrots, penguins, and pigeons?
We're all just looking at Karen.
Or a parrot, penguins, and pigeons.
Is it The Three Caballeros?
That's not 1960s.
No. That was a short, wasn't it? Or was that?
Parrots, penguins, and pigeons.
Okay, Disney.
What year?
Oh. Is it Mary Poppins?
Yes.
Oh.
I was so excited.
The parrot from the umbrella.
Yes.
Which talks. The penguins in the animated series.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the pigeons because of the bird lady.
Yes.
Fist pump.
Wow.
Double fist pump.
I was like, man, there's quite a strong bird motif in that movie. I was thinking about it. All right. Who wrote Mary Poppins? Yeah, I know. And then there's the kite song. There's a lot of flying. Who wrote Mary Poppins? Chris?
P.L. Travers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you know what the P stands for?
Patricia.
No.
Oh, God, it was...
Pamela.
Yes.
Yes. Ooh. Yes. I was like, what's an old-timey P name?
Yes. Lady P name. All right. The atmospheric air that surrounds our planet is mostly made up of what?
Nitrogen.
Yes, nitrogen.
Yeah!
79% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, and then the small remaining amount is just carbon dioxide and random gases, other gases.
Farts.
Not random gases, other gases.
Random,
they're not
just random.
Just random.
Just that random.
Febreze.
Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Febreze.
All right. There are 5 basic layers to the atmosphere. I'll tell you what they are.
Okay.
Yeah,
Can you put them in order from closest to the Earth? Mm. There's just 5.
Okay. All right.
It's like fourth grade. So
yeah.
You guys ready?
Sure.
They are.
We're going to bomb this.
Well, the thermosphere. The exosphere, the troposphere, stratosphere, and mesosphere.
All right. Well, mesosphere is going to be in the middle.
Okay.
Nice. Exosphere should be in the outside.
Right.
All right.
And thermo and tropo. I feel like one of those is closer, but I'm not sure.
What's hotter, thermos? Like
I guess
thermos. Wait, tropo?
Like tropical, right?
No. Mm. I think there's another etymology.
So let's go to the other. So maybe stratosphere is the second highest if exo is the
maybe,
highest?
I think stratosphere
maybe.
Is the lowest. Isn't
oh,
it?
Really?
Because you can see things. I don't know. It doesn't seem that far, like jet streams and stuff. Stratospheric.
Okay, stratos is like
that's
just
also
sky,
the name
right?
Of a...
So maybe the stratosphere is closest to us.
All right, so what are yours?
I would say, okay,
what
from,
are your
from
solid?
Lowest to highest,
yeah.
I would go stratosphere, troposphere, mesosphere, thermosphere, and exosphere.
Oh, you're so close.
Okay.
The first two are flip-flop.
That's it.
Yes. So tropo is the closest.
Oh, it is. Okay.
And then stratosphere. Mesosphere, yes, is the middle, number 3.
Okay.
And then the thermosphere is... It has a lot of hot molecules. It might still be cold because they're far apart.
Hot molecules. Get your hot molecules
and then,
in the thermosphere.
Then you're totally right. Exosphere is the outer. Is the
so once
right.
you get middle, almost.
You got to come up with it. Yeah,
so close.
Yeah.
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 Good job, you guys.
Think of a mnemonic.
Not bad.
That up in
good.
The air.
Not bad.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break. A word from our sponsor.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Calling all kids in the car. Brittany and Meredith here from the chart-topping Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast. Are you dreading another silent car ride with the fam? We've got the cure. 3 rounds of fresh trivia every single week. Movies, music, even science and Disney. We've got something for every trivia buff in the car. No more crickets chirping on those long journeys. The Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast is your secret weapon for connecting and laughing with kids of all ages, teens, toddlers, adults, it doesn't matter. Spark their curiosity and challenge their brains with every episode. New episodes drop weekly wherever you get your podcasts. Search for the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast and turn those car rides into epic adventures.
Welcome back. You're listening to Good Job Brain. And this week we are talking about things up in the air, in the sky.
So we've all, I think, at one time or another worked in tall buildings. I've worked as high as, I think, the 13th floor on a building before.
Whoa, I can't believe the building had a 13th floor.
Typically they leave that off.
I was actually very happy that the building had a 13th floor. It didn't give in to the superstition.
You know what's kind of weird is that the building where we stayed in the hotel for our wedding is actually in Chinatown, and it doesn't have a 13th floor, but it does have a 4th floor.
Oh, that is weird. 4th floor is means
death. That's the unlucky floor.
That's the unlucky.
13 is not unlucky in certain Asian countries, but 4 is very unlucky. There's no rooms there, though. It's just meeting rooms. You can avoid it if you want.
So maybe that is a concession.
Interesting.
It's just a bunch of dead bodies. That's where
there is a floor. That's where they keep them.
So if you have a job in a tall building in a skyscraper, it's generally a pretty safe job, I think, these days. Yeah. You know, unless if you're working on the outside, like modern window washers, you know, this is still one of those jobs where even though it's got some technology and safety equipment to it, most tall buildings, you clean the windows by sending people on the outside to wash them from the outside. Yeah. It's one of those things where until you're at your desk and you see the guys, you know, lowering on the platform right outside your window.
Right.
My friend told me the craziest story like yesterday about window washing. He was in another room and he heard his wife scream, and they lived in this big apartment building where all the windows have window ledges, but you can't really open the windows. Mm. And so she screams, he runs out there, and there's like this red hawk there with a pigeon that it's eating, and it's smearing the pigeon all over their ledge and the window. And she's yelling, and they call the building and they're like, well, we're not going to clean the windows for another 6 months. And so they just had to live with that outside their window.
Just a daily reminder.
Yeah. The carnage.
Mother nature.
Yeah, you think you're in this modern apartment and all protected. No.
Who's going to get you?
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's horrible. It's an important job. You need to clean off dirt and dust and grime and pigeon carnage, apparently, add to that list as well. This is one of those occupations that really, the development of the modern skyscraper, you know, brought a lot of new jobs with it, like elevator operators and things like that were never positions before. And window washers was a big part of this. And it is a lot safer today than it was in the early days. I mean, you know, we see a lot of times the motorized platform that lowers from the roof is very common. Sometimes it may be manual operated. But, you know, for the most part, it's a pretty safe, stable area to work from. In the early days, they didn't have anything like movable platforms.
If you
needed to clean the windows on the 75th floor of the building, you would go up to the 75th floor, open the window, crawl out on the ledge, and wash the window from the outside. The first skyscrapers were 15 or 20 stories, you know, but even at that height, you can only use ladders up to a certain height. And they would use ladders for the future floors. They would have scaffoldings that you could build up, but you know, you can't build a scaffolding that's 80 stories tall. No. And at a certain point, you literally would just go up to the floor, crawl out on the ledge, clean the window from the outside. You know, you would strap yourself in, but this was dangerous, scary work.
Yeah.
I would like to read to you guys from an article from 1934 here that I think will put this in perspective a little bit.
Oh. Fear of heights is acrophobia, right?
Yeah. Acrophobia.
Acrophobia.
Mm-hmm. Like acrobats.
Oh.
All right. So I would like to read for you guys an article from 1934. This is from Modern Mechanics and Inventions magazine. And the title of this article is How a Skyscraper Window Washer Faces Death. So I will try and read this to you in my best Chris Kohler old-timey newsreel voice.
Yeah. Okay.
Hailed as Superman, stunt artists are paid fabulous sums to risk their necks for a thrill-hungry public, yet their most hair-raising feats are duplicated every day by the daring men who clean the windows of the nation's towering skyscrapers. And it continues on. The aces of the window brigade put circus acrobats and parachute jumpers to shame, for there is no margin of error, no nets or parachutes to break a possible fall.
That's true.
An error in judgment, a slip of the life belt, and the window cleaner has signed his own death warrant. Below him there is nothing but a yawning city canyon, a square of concrete pavement to land and die on.
Jeez.
Yeah. Whoa. So, not to get a little over dramatic about it. Yeah. And it's accompanied by several photos of the crew of the men who, all men at this point, of the men who cleaned the windows in the Empire State Building in New York City. And the photos are pretty harrowing. You look at them, these guys are literally out on the edge of the building. They have a leather strap that has two hooks on it. They hook themselves on one end. They hook themselves on the other end. And they are leaning off the edge of the building at 80 stories above the streets of Manhattan with their cleaning tools in their hands. You couldn't work if it was too windy because you get blown off.
Yeah.
You know, for obvious reasons, you can't work if it's, you know, snowing. I mean, not to mention the fact that cleaning the windows wouldn't make as much sense in the snow.
That's true.
They interviewed the chief of the cleaning crew, and he came from working in coal mines for 10 years, you know, to sort of give you a sense. Yes, they needed to attract men who weren't scared of working. He says that sort of his first day job interview was he would take a guy up to the ledge on the 80th floor, open the window, and say, okay, can you get out there and just show me what you can do? And he says, he's like, I would know right then and there whether this guy was right for the job. You know, he's like, either the guy would get out on the ledge and see what he could do, or the guy would just sort of, you know, blanch and run away. And that was sort of the interview to see if you were hardy enough to be a window washer on the crew. We do, in fact, have the window washing industry to thank for one of history's greatest inventions.
Squeegee!
The squeegee!
Yeah!
Yes, the modern squeegee. I did not know this. Did you guys know? Do you guys know where the word squeegee comes from?
The sound it makes?
I had always thought it was,
it portmanteau?
It just seems very like an onomatopoeia word. Yeah, like squeegee on the outside of the window.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like when I clean the window. It derives from an older word called a squilgee. And a squilgee was like it's like a wooden blade, kind of like a broom, and like fishermen would use it to like scrape fish guts and just
the
debris off the decks of their ships to keep the decks safe.
Huh.
Yeah. And so from there, it kind of became a squilgee for a window to a squeegee.
Huh.
But yes, modern window washers in the 20s and 30s brought us the rubber bladed squeegee that we now take for granted and use all around our own homes.
Wow.
Apparently, the original device in common use was called a Chicago squeegee, which does sound like something you would see on Urban Dictionary, but it was in fact a valuable tool.
Or it's like a some mob move.
Give him a Chicago squeegee.
We're going to go send him a Chicago squeegee. So if you are in a tall building and you are looking at a nice clear view of the windows, thank you to the men and women who put their safety at risk to keep them clean.
Do window washers get paid more because it's super dangerous and only a selective type of people can do that type of work?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure about in today's environment if they get paid more or less relative to other professions. There is a fun little anecdote from this article that I was just reading to you where he says, so this is, again, 1934. The average window cleaner gets $30 weekly for 48 hours of total work. So that seems pretty good, $1934.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah. And again, you know, as I say, they talk about one of the benefits of the job is you don't have to work when it's raining. Mm. You don't have to work when it's snowing.
And you don't need to get it cleaned every day.
That's right. Yeah. As Dana said, sometimes, even with modern equipment, you may need to look at bird guts for 6 months.
Yep.
Speaking of bird guts, I got some cool bird facts. Actually, not cool. They're cruel. These are some a-hole birds.
Oh, okay.
Do you guys know what brood parasites are? You probably know the phenomenon.
Yeah,
this
we've talked
the
about these
term.
Before.
Bird mite?
These are parasites that take over other animals, right? Oh.
You know the bird cuckoo, right? Like cuckoo clock?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They are some a-hole birds.
Really?
They are an example of brood parasites, Dana. Oh. You're nodding your head. You know what they do,
Do they pretend to be part of the nest, like one of the baby birds, and they steal food? Is that it?
Very similar. So cuckoos, for example, they will lay eggs, in nests with other eggs from other bird species. So if I'm a mommy
they just
cuckoo,
go around like one egg here, one egg there, sneaking it in.
In most cases, it's amazing. The baby cuckoo bird or brood parasite bird will generally hatch first because of the shorter incubation time and usually is larger than the other birds, or, you know, these are different species of birds.
Okay.
And they're larger and it requires the most amount of food. So basically it's
like stealing resources from the other babies.
It is. And it's so many jerk things because it requires more food and they're more aggressive. The other hatchlings, which are actually the actual biological offspring of the host bird, they will starve and die.
Right.
Because this one giant baby bird is eating up all the resources.
I'm amazed that the mama birds don't notice.
So sometimes the baby parasite cuckoo bird, in this case, since it hatches first, it will push out all the other eggs out of the nest so that the eggs will drop and die.
Oh, man.
So the poor host mommy bird most of the time has no idea that this is not her baby.
Oh.
Isn't that nuts? There are these pictures and it's just comical because the mommy bird's like super tiny, trying to feed this cuckoo bird baby that's like super big feeding it mouth to mouth, or I guess beak to beak.
Beak to beak. There are no winners when brood parasites are in the picture.
So cuckoos are one of the species. There are a lot of other birds that do this. And
that's so cutthroat.
You think that's cutthroat? There's this thing called the mafia hypothesis. I'm going to introduce you to probably the most a-hole bird. It is the cowbird, and it's called a cowbird because it travels with cattle. Mm-hmm. And it
cowbird.
It feeds on parasites and insects that are on the cow skin.
Okay.
So it's a pretty sweet relationship, right? It's pretty sweet.
Symbiotic. Game.
The problem is the cowbirds are dependent on the moving herd of cattle, so they're always on the move. This means the cowbird doesn't have time to settle down, to build a nest, lay eggs, and take care of its babies. So instead of investing time and energy into raising its own baby, the cowbird will lay its eggs onto other nests of other bird species and leave it there for the victim stepmother host bird to take care of it. The difference between the cowbird and cuckoos and other brood parasites is that the mommy cowbird will fly and check on all these nests. If the parent cowbird sees that its egg or its chick is no longer in that nest, like, which means the host bird has kicked it out, detected that it's an intruder and kicked it out, the cowbird will F up that whole nest.
He trashes the nest.
So in a way, the cowbird is blackmailing.
You've got a nice little nest here. It would be a shame if anything was to happen to it.
Protection racket.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The cowbird is blackmailing and forcing other birds to raise their babies or else they will kill their whole family.
Bird extortion.
Isn't that horrible? This is known as the it's a hypothesis, but it's known as the mafia hypothesis.
The mafia.
This is chilling.
Welcome to our involuntary foster bird program.
Hey, Matt. Did you know that wombats poop cubes?
Nope. Never heard that before.
Did you know the unicorn is the national animal of Scotland, Ken?
I didn't know, nor do I care.
Neil, did you know that Liechtenstein is the only doubly landlocked country in Europe?
Jeff, isn't that an American pop artist?
Well, actually, it's both. If you want to learn things like that and more, join us each week on Triviality, a pub trivia-style game show podcast where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Listen in each week to answer general knowledge trivia alongside exciting guests from around the world.
And we're here, too.
Join us every Tuesday for new hour-long episodes of Triviality, plus tons of extra theme content on everything from The Office and Lord of the Rings to science and geography.
And sometimes we even do sports.
Find us on all your preferred podcast apps and take part in the fun of playing bar trivia without the need to wear pants.
Real mature, Jeff.
Forget it, Neil. It's Triviality.
All right, our episode is nearing the end, but we have one more non-topic quiz from Colin, which is a surprise. What is it?
Yes, I have a quiz for you guys called Double Double.
Double Double.
Has nothing to do with hamburgers. It is a general trivia quiz here. The twist is that every answer I'm looking for will be two words, and each word will have a double letter in it.
Whoa.
So, not necessarily the same letter.
So, that's
a little bit of a hint there. For all the questions are going to be two-word answers.
Two-word answers.
And there's a double letter in each of the words.
So, like pitter-patter.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Sure. That would be the same letter. Doesn't have to necessarily
be.
All right. Here we go. This Woody Allen romantic comedy won the Academy Award for Best Picture in 1977.
You guys are good.
Dana.
Annie Hall.
Oh. Yes, indeed. Directed by Woody Allen, which I just noticed is a double-double word as well. This highly caffeinated soda was introduced in 1979 as the Coca-Cola Company's answer to Mountain Dew.
Lacroix.
Like Mountain Dew, it is also a citrus soda, if that gives you any clue. Karen.
Mellow Yellow.
Yes. Mellow Yellow.
Squirt.
No.
Squirt. Fresca.
So it's not mellow at all. It's actually more from caffeinated. Mellow.
Yeah, just for comparison here, a regular 12-ounce can of Coke has 34 milligrams of caffeine. Mm-hmm. A regular 12-ounce can of Mellow Yellow, 53 milligrams of caffeine.
Not mellow. Hey.
Yeah.
You were mellow before you had it.
Right.
Yeah, until you crashed.
Yeah.
We pee.
This com.
Sorry, yeah, it is. Does. You are right, Karen. Yes.
Time to poo, time to pee. Mark it. This comic strip character debuted in 1966 and was named after a popular confection. This character joined an established strip already in progress.
Named after.
By a hair.
Peppermint Patty?
Yes! Peppermint Patty, yes. Who Charles Schulz?
I don't know how we all got that at the same time.
Because I think we're thinking about titles of comics, and then once you said
it was a character in it.
Yes.
And you're like, Entourage comic.
Wow.
Yes, Peppermint Patty.
Wow.
Yes, indeed, named after the York Peppermint Patty candy.
Any legal issues? No.
I've never read anywhere about any legal issues. I think that the York Peppermint Patty people were kind of just flattered, I think, in a way that their character was named after their candy. Yeah, you know, it was a simpler time in 1966. Yeah.
If it's now,
well, they didn't name her like Peppermint Patty York. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. This British musical group can lay claim to the second best-selling movie soundtrack of all time, with over 15 million certified copies sold.
British
musical group. You want me to give you the year?
Yeah.
It was on the Billboard best-selling album charts for 120 weeks, ending in 1980. Chris.
The Bee Gees.
It is the Bee Gees. Yes.
For Saturday Night Fever.
For Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, yes, right. Where they wrote and produced most of the music for
it. I got as far as Queen. That's one word.
Aren't they from Australia?
They lived in Australia. They were actually born in England and came to fame in England. But yeah, you're right. When they were younger, they started off their musical career in Australia.
So this, of course, raises the question, what is the best-selling movie soundtrack of all time?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Chris.
Oh.
Chris, we'll take a guess.
Titanic.
It's not Titanic. Oh. I'll give you a little bit of a hint. The album succeeded almost entirely on the success of one song in particular.
The Bodyguard.
The Bodyguard.
Yes. Really?
Yes.
Holy cow.
Yes, The Bodyguard.
I will always love you. Yeah.
There's also I Have Nothing, which is also a very big hit. Miss Houston.
It's true. Yeah. Yes. 17 million certified copies sold of the Bodyguard soundtrack. It's funny. You know, they say like a lot of these highest selling album record numbers will probably never fall just because it's so fragmented now with digital downloads and they don't necessarily factor those in.
Yep.
So the Bodyguard kind of came just
because people buy more singles now than full albums.
Yes.
You know, pirate. Yeah.
The life of this legendary Scottish figure was depicted in the movie Braveheart.
I don't know what his name is.
Chris.
William Wallace.
Yes, yeah. William Wallace. We'll be charitable and say that the movie is largely fictionalized.
Yes.
It routinely makes the lists of, like, most historically inaccurate movies of all time.
I did not
like,
know
I don't even think they wore kilts, right? Like,
that's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. They didn't wear kilts. Right. Yeah, just many, many, many inaccuracies.
Liberties.
Yeah, there you
liberties.
Go. There you go. Creative license. This traditional Italian sport can be traced back to the Roman Empire and involves tossing metal spheres on a dirt playing field. Karen!
Bocce ball.
Yes, bocce ball.
Which is kind of a cheater because ball doesn't have to be in the name.
It's true. Although in America, it's fair to call it bocce ball, but you're absolutely right. To be perfectly proper, it is just bocce.
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 I think. I don't know.
Sure, with our best faux Italian accent. Buongiorno. All right, we'll close out here. We'll close out here with one, which should be easy if you know your U.S. capitals.
These
come up a lot for us, so I know Karen knows. All right, in addition to Jefferson City, Missouri, there are two other U.S. capitals who are in a state that also has a double letter in it.
So the capital has a double letter and the state has a double letter?
Yes.
So Jefferson City, Missouri.
Jefferson City, Missouri is one. Okay. There are two more.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, Chris.
Pass.
How do you guys gonna work together to solve these?
Well, the easiest thing is to figure out the state with the double letters and then work backwards.
Minnesota.
Oh, okay. Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Minnesota is St. Paul.
Oh, St. Paul. Oh.
But yeah, I think that's a good way to do it is, yeah, work backwards from the states. Karen's running through the Animaniacs song.
I am.
Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Harrisburg.
Yeah. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Yep. Looking for one more. I'm going to give you guys a hint if you want.
Like what?
Massachusetts?
No, Boston. It's in the South.
Missouri.
A lot of music in this.
Tennessee.
Yes. Nashville. Nashville, Tennessee. Yes.
Cool. So there you go. Nashville, Tennessee.
Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Jefferson City, Missouri.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Did you just look that up?
Yes, I traveled to all 50 states.
Hey, what's your capital here?
I could trust the internet.
Okay, well, goodbye.
I want to put some boots on the ground and verify for myself.
Yeah.
All right, well done.
Whoa, that was cool. All right, and that's our episode. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learn a lot of cool things about a-hole birds.
I could have sworn we had three kids here yesterday. Nope, just me.
Just me.
Don't worry about it.
That
checks out. There's a baby bird in here. It's fine.
Flicks away a last little piece of eggshell. That's nothing.
And window washing and also the worst airplanes ever. Oh, what are those little flap things called again?
Ailerons.
And you can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and also on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And check out our sponsor, Squarespace, at squarespace.com/goodjobbrain. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.